Hey, welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepe, also known as Aka. If you know me, I have a bunch of people I like to talk about because we have shared experiences, and yeah, it's like one of my favorite communities to be part of. We all get to... Have you ever met a group of people that we don't know each other physically, but we know each other online? But when we meet, the energy is unmatched. It's like your lost sister that you've finally seen and you have tea for them. This is how I felt about this person. I actually just met her personally a few weeks ago. And when I was getting ready for this recording, I was telling myself, it didn't feel like that when we met. It felt like, oh my goodness, I've known this girl for so long. But yeah, we know the same people, but it just felt like, yeah, I've found my person. With that being said, she's also doing amazing work. She is one of those girls in tech, in STEM, all the good stuff. And I can't really wait for her to just thrive in that industry and do all the cool stuff she does. Like, you know, the STEM industry is one thing that we haven't really invested in a lot in Zambia. I never got why we needed to do that, but now with the line of work I do, I see the importance of the work that she does and others, and I just really can't wait to get into it. With that being said, everybody, welcome my Susie sister, Mwangala. Hi, Mwangala.
Hi, I'm so excited to speak with you.
Girl. Me too. I know. So you and I met at Faith's book launch because you're one of the speakers. Cool. And I was so happy to see you. Is that weird?
I was too. No, like, you know, I had been telling my mom from the time I came back from the Susie experience, I'm like, I really, really, really need to meet my Susie sisters. And then I saw you, and when you were walking towards me with so much energy, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is my sister, period. This is my sister.
I only had that energy for you. Farron was rolling her eyes at me because I was late, obviously. I saw you and I was so happy because I think in the same week is when I asked you if you could be on the podcast. And you were like, yeah, sure, let's schedule it. And we scheduled it for today. But yeah. I didn't know I was going to be there. So Faith put on one of the cards she puts on when she wants you to show up. I don't know if she does it to everybody but me. So she did that. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll go. And I think it's the best decision I made in June, to be honest. I loved seeing everybody, especially you and Farron. You're my people.
Yeah, it was really so nice to see you and finally meet you both after being in a virtual space together for a very long time. It was very, very nice to see you both. I was so excited. And all the tea we had.
I was about to say this. I was waiting for you to say the tea. We had a debrief for an hour just to, like, give each other tea.
In the back, there's a workshop going on in front of us and we're just chatting away. It was so fun.
And I think that's what Susie does, is it really just, I always say this, even if I would find somebody that did Susie and that was like 5-10 years ago, I think would still relate. The energy
seems
to be the same year in, year out, and the drama too, but moving on.
Girl.
Every single time. But so what's your favorite memory in America?
I think my favorite, there's so many to pick from. I think my favorite memory in America was going through our DC, like the DC tour. That was like the funniest moment for me. And I think that was when like my childlike excitement came out. You know, you're all together in this big group, but then I gravitated towards this one girl. Her name is Shija. God bless her soul. She is, you know, do you know childlike excitement? Like, you're running up and down hills like little girls. Mind you, we're like 18, 19, big girl. but we're so excited and just exploring and seeing the different monuments and also being able to just try different places, see different places. I think that was one peak memory for me. And I think a significant thing that me and Shrija did was, I think I was on a call with my mom. So I was like showing her like where we were and whatnot. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you, mom. Because my mom is the one who pushed me to apply.
Yeah.
And I think that was the most full circle moment. Like there were so many, but like that one, like right off the top of my head stands out.
I have to admit, because I always say this, America was fun, but the DC experience is top notch. Like, I can just imagine, like, oh my God, we went to Capitol, and I'm just like, hey, guys, you can have me. I can live in DC. Please.
Please, just give me the money.
What do I need to move to America? And I know that there's a lot of stuff going on in the air about the US and everything, but I always say this to people: when you get there, I know it looks bad now from the outside in, but trust me, it's actually fun when you have money, of course. But
yeah, when you have money, especially when you have money.
Oh my goodness! So I also like the campus and the food at Mrs. E's was everybody's not favorite. So what was your favorite thing to do at KU?
My favorite thing to do at KU was take walks.
Ooh, me too, girl.
I loved taking walks because it's such a beautiful campus. I mean, here in Zambia, I mean, my school is fairly small. Like the campus I'm at is very, very small. It's just like your school and the parking lot. You don't see much of it. And I've never really, like, I've been to like Unza, I've been to Unilas, I've been to...
Have you been to the new campus for Unilas?
Yes, I have, period. Like, it's so...
I work there now, and I walk into those gates every single time, and every time somebody's
looking me up. Like, is this in Zambia?
No, they did a number. Like, Unilas is doing amazing, but please go on.
Yeah. It's a, KU has such a beautiful campus, and because it's in the summer, the air is warm, the sunset is so tea... And I think that was my favorite thing to do. And also, I think just being able to just fully take in the experience, you know, it's like, oh my days. I'm in the US. On a, you know how like you'd be watching, like I like watching shows like Grown-ish and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this is an actual campus in the US. Like, people will be like, oh, no, after all, the U.S. is just a country. I'm like, bro, you have to go there to understand what we're talking about. Like, you have to be there to understand what the feeling is like, you know? And I was there at the time when there was a lot of, like, renovation work going on. Mm-hmm. But I think my favorite part about KU was the engineering department because... Like, we know that the mentoring thing, like the way they used to pair us with mentors, right?
Yeah.
My mentor worked in the engineering department and she gave me a tour of, like, when I say I was beyond fascinated. First of all, they have a whole dinosaur skeleton hanging from the ceiling. And I'm just like, I ain't never.
Mangala, is the engineering department the one by the corner, as if you're going up to the pond?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One. What's the name of your mentor? I think they gave us the same mentor.
I can't remember her name.
But she's a lady, right?
Yes, she's a lady, an Indian lady.
Oh, no, not the same. Okay, but yeah, the dinosaur is amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, seeing all of that really just spoke to like little me and trying to figure out what my place in STEM is and what I want to do in science. And it all came back to me that, like, when I was younger, I remember there used to be like this dinosaur exhibit at showgrounds and how I always bothered my mother because I'm like, I want to go and see the dinosaurs. And seeing like the skeleton from the ceiling and seeing the building and wow. Wow. Yeah, and it's been a year since my experience, and now talking about it around the same time.
Oh yeah! Congratulations! Yeah. It's been 2 years since mine.
I mean, you get to have this conversation all the time, and I, like, it's just like, you know, everything just comes back to you, and yeah, I think that was my favorite part about KU.
So I think that one of the reasons why I do this passport series, so the passport series is a collection of all my stories from my sisters, is for me to keep that same energy alive. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to talk to somebody about the US. Unfortunately, guys, like, literally, I can't even pretend. I just want to sit on a call for 1 hour, 30 minutes, and we ask reminiscing about our time in the US, the stuff we did. That's mm-hmm. the main reason. I don't even want to go. This is a me thing. This is one of my favorite things about the podcast. And I also, one thing I'm learning about the two of us is we actually are similar in so many ways, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you do the stuff I was doing in the US, and I'm like, okay, Mungal and I, okay, apart from us being losers, but Mungal and I actually.
We're pretty much, you know, like,
yes, what is Mungal is the young me. Apart from her being in STEM, literally, one of my favorite things was to take walks. I will be in my skinny shorts in a crop top, and I'll be going to the pond to sit on a bench and mind my own business after class. Like, you know how mm-hmm. everybody wanted to maybe do their homework after class? I was mm-hmm. going for walks. I was also lost. My time there, I was like, oh, I got lost. But yeah, did you go to the museum?
Did I go to the museum? I did. I don't think we had time to, like, everyone else went to the museum at one point.
The campus museum.
I had so many side quests, Aka. I had so many side quests. You
they
know
took
when I go
to the museum. I'm wondering why they did. Yeah, they took us to the museum.
I think it was because, like I said, like, there was a lot of renovation and
building going on.
So maybe I think there was something going on at the museum, but I think I passed through it.
Did you see the one downtown?
The museum downtown. Oh, you mean that museum on Mass Street?
Yeah, so there was one at school and there was one downtown, and the one downtown had like Africa, the world flag.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to put a pin from the country you're from. Oh, that's the coolest thing ever.
I went to that museum when we had our host parent took us there. She was before we leave, because she was in another county. She lived in another mm-hmm. county. So she's like, oh, before we leave here, I'd like to, like, show you guys this museum. And, like, there was the quilts and whatnot. And that, I was so fascinated because I love museums. Okay. But
again, Mangala, you and I are the same person.
I've never been to Lusaka Museum.
I should take you. I want to do, after this, you can tell me your schedule. I want to do a trip at the museum. One of these days, I'm bored, so I miss the museum. The museum, Lusaka, I even know people that work at Lusaka Museum. That's how much it's my favorite place.
No, it's a date. It's a date.
Yeah, it's a date. We can talk afterwards and set it up. I've been thinking of going to the museum because I miss it so much. It's such a peaceful space, and you don't bump into people too. Then also, now you compare. For me, I think I don't want to bump into people on any given day. But then one thing about the museums here is I now start to compare, right? I'm like, well, when I didn't go to the museum in South Africa, but we did like a museum in Czech, in Prague. We did a museum in DC. We did a museum in Lawrence. I did a museum in Kansas City too. So I think I did like 5-6 museums when I was in in America, and I come back here and I'm like, so guys, this is what we're doing at the museum. Why are you doing this to us?
The museums in DC, the Smithsonian, that was every time you're walking into a museum, you're tired, but you're not tired because you're like, oh, wow. Every given fish.
What do you call the museum where they were like giving us like ocean creatures?
I think it was the Museum of Natural History.
Oh, Natural History.
Yes.
That museum.
And then the National Gallery of Art. Girl! Oh.
Is it the one that has so many stories that if you're not sure, you can get lost?
Yes, because I actually have a story. The bus almost left me on our way to the mall because I went to the museum one way and came
out. And couldn't get out the other way. I know that because I also got lost.
I'm just like, huh? There's no way. And you know, where here you don't really need, I mean, Google Maps in Zambia, psh, girl, come on. But there I need Google Maps for every single thing, the more included. I'm just like, ah. But yeah, no, the museums have such a special, they have a special like feeling to them. It just makes your brain tingle. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is. So my story is, so we split in groups. The friend you're talking about, mine was Anusha. She's also my sister now. So Anu and I would do stuff together. In DC, we did a lot of stuff together. Getting lost together was part of was part of the package. So for us, they really did emphasize the buddy thing. So you kind of want to buddy with somebody that has the same energy as you. So then they say, we're giving you 4 hours to play. You'd be like, oh, you're giving us so much hours. I don't want to spend 4 hours in a museum. Trust me. You spend 2 hours because you're lost. And Anu Anu was my person at any given day. And it was crazy, but I liked it. Yeah, the museums, you learn about a lot about a place through the museum, their history, what they believe in. And yeah, I liked it. I think museums are always my favorite place to visit when I travel to different countries.
Yeah.
So now let's get down to it, madam. How did you get into STEM?
How did I get into STEM? STEM for me is all a matter of curiosity. Like, it all started with just being like asking a lot of questions, you know, why does this work the way it does? Why is this the way it is? And so I'm so grateful to my parents. Like, I say this all the time. I shout out my parents because they really put up with a talkative child. Like, I asked a million questions every day, and my parents having careers in business and in humanities, it's like, what is this girl even saying? So you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy you some books and you're going to find the answers to those questions yourself. And then it started from there. My parents were very deliberate in putting me in spaces where I could get my questions answered. So I started volunteering fairly young. Like, I started volunteering around like 9, 10, you know, when you go to a community school with a certain organization and whatnot. And so we attended a workshop on sanitation and health and water management and all of that. And so that's when it clicked. I'm like, there I was, like a few days later, I'm like in science class, I'm like in grade 5 or something. I'm in grade 5. And then it was a light bulb moment. I can't even describe what it was, but there it was. I'm like, okay, solar water purification, cool. Solar water purification, how can you make this accessible? Because I was like, because of all these like volunteering activities, I really had so much compassion for people that didn't have the same things I had. So I'm like, a big thing for me in all the work that I've done in STEM and advocacy is inclusivity and accessibility. And so I came up with the solar water purifier. I'm like, oh, okay, moving on. And then I entered it into that competition, the DSTV competition for the Powerpuff Girl Awards and whatnot. Yeah. And then, you know, I was, when I entered the competition and I won, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah, probably. I'm like, you're lying to me. You're lying to me, right? And they're like, no. My mom was like, because I came back from school that day and I was tired because we were preparing for awards and whatnot. So I'm like, she's like, remember the competition you entered? I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh, you won. I'm like, are you serious? I won. She's like, yeah. But then I still have to make sure it's legit and whatnot. I'm like, but mom, we saw it on TV. It's legit. What do you mean? Yeah. She was a bit skeptical in the beginning because she was just like, baby girl, I've been to South Africa multiple times and it's not like the safest place anymore. I just want you to be safe. And so when we finally made sure everything was in place and we spoke to my school, which took a lot of convincing, and I'm so glad my high school, my former high school now, is so open-minded, because I needed that support that time, you know. It took a lot of convincing for them to let me go and receive this award, but it's opened me up to so many opportunities. One thing I remember was we went to this science center, and there's just something about big objects dangling from the ceiling that always catches my attention because it had an aeroplane on the ceiling. Ooh. Like a spacecraft. And I'm just like, I want to be an aerospace engineer. In that moment, I turned to my dad and I said, I'm going to become an aerospace engineer. He's like, you change your career every day. I'm like, at least it's in science. So, okay. At least it's in science. And then from there, I just really embraced being extremely curious. I embraced I embraced reading a lot about my science, about my favorite scientists, delving more into why is it that there's not many people who look like me in these spaces. But then it's simply because I didn't know, because we're quite a number, you know. Yeah. We're quite a number. It's simply because I didn't know. And then that's when I realized the power of knowledge. Knowledge is power. So if you know stuff, you're able to act on it. And so that's really been what's been driving me throughout my journey in STEM, just always being curious, always wanting to know stuff, and always being willing to share what I have or what I know.
So when I first heard about you from one of the girls, could be probably Faith, and we were talking about how I always like to be very intentional about my little cousins, right? Mm-hmm. How do we build your career from a young age? Like, this is cute that you go to high school, but how do we nurture you in a sense that from a young age, you are competitive, you know what you want, we're building you to be this person, and you can come up and change your mind later on, but you already have a platform where you're speaking your mind and you are talking about the things you love and you're very curious. So I think it's Faith. Faith was like, one thing that went right for Mwangala. And I was like, no, because I really didn't even know you at that point. She said Mwangala's parents. Like, Mwangala's parents built her career from a young age. Like, you know how when parents see you're curious about something and they now just get involved, like, okay, cool, you're curious, I will pay attention to this curiosity, I will do my best to feed on it, I will do my best to feed you what you need to know. If I can't answer your book, if I can't answer your question, I'll get you a book like they used to. And imagine if, I think they did right on you. You know what I mean?
Like,
imagine if a lot of parents would get involved. I think it's different circumstances, but that's one good, you're quite a study, ma'am. Like, we should all take notes. Because, again, you started to volunteer at 9. I started at 15.
mm-hmm.
Like, you've seen the different unfair advantage you have because you started early. And I always say this, start early. When you do stuff early, it does open different doors for you.
Yes, yes, it does. And, you know, it's only now that my parents don't really stay for all my engagements and whatnot. But, like, I can say for, like, the longest, I'm turning 20 this year. Yeah. Right? So for the past 10 years, my mom has been to every interview. My dad has been to every conference, every public speaking engagement, everything, you know. And they saw that I'm talkative and I'm confident and I'm very sure about what I'm doing. But there are certain moments where I felt like what I'm doing wasn't enough. They are the ones that said, look around you, girl. My dad said, I used to go to South Africa to go and buy cars for people to bring them here. You took me to South Africa. You took me to Sandton, baby girl. I was staying in a 5-star hotel because of you. Yeah. And they're just like, and I'm just like, you know, sometimes when you do things so much, you tend to see it. It becomes like, they're obviously used to this.
You become familiar. Normal.
But then to them, it's like, I don't know what you've done. It's like, I don't know what you've done. Because I even remember, like, when I was preparing to, like, this whole the Susi thing and whatnot, my mom for the longest time wanted to go to the U.S., especially when she was really, really young. But then she spoke about how, you know, even, like, familial support, like the way we've spoken about how family is very important and their support goes a long way in, like, the work that we do. And how she's told me so many times how she strived to be a very supportive parent and to be a listening parent, and seeing her child, her firstborn child, do all these things and just live the life that she never got to live is like a full circle moment for her. But then the best I can do is make sure that this life that she's provided for me, she's going to reap the benefits in the future. Yeah. Because when I finally do become the baller, the tech baller I intend on becoming, I'm going to ball on these people. Like, I'm going to spend. Like, whatever you want, baby. It's whatever.
And I get where you're coming from. One thing I realized, and you and I briefly talked about this when we had our tea time a few weeks ago, was how you talked about it more. I didn't, but I've realized that for me, my hobby was mostly liked by my grandfather. Everybody else, she thinks it's like, everybody knows I have a company as a hobby. It's funny. but my grandfather is the one that really was very involved. Like, if I'm on radio, on TV, he's going to be listening to his grandchild, because I was the first grandchild. Like, oh, my baby is on TV and radio. And it's really true that you really can't do so much without family. Because they're really the heart of everything. Unlike you, I'm very independent too. This is when I actually lean more towards my family. Because I'm like, I really do come from a household of people. Eh? Didn't come in this world alone. But because I am also like in my mid-20s, what that also says is our visions don't tarry. At first, I was easy to control. Control is a word we're going to use in this. I was easy to control, to manage, to influence. Now I probably not the easiest to control, manage, and influence, because I can say yes and still do it no. And how do you see that play in your life right now?
The way I see it play is... you know, I've always, like, the way I've been brought up, it's yes, ma'am, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And now, like, getting older, and I'm just like, wait, can we talk about this? Like, can we discuss?
Can we negotiate?
Sorry?
Like, can we negotiate?
I'm like, yeah, can we negotiate? Like, can we talk about this? It's a point where it's conversations that I've had to have with like my parents. Like, I'm not being disrespectful, but can I like at least try to make this decision by myself? And are you going to support me if it doesn't go the way I want it to go?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's that thing for where because you're so outspoken and whatnot, you're viewed as being like very and you know everything, but like it's not like I know everything. I'm just trying to show you that you've given me opinion. Yeah, you have an opinion, I have an opinion, and you've given me enough steps to challenge, and you've given me the tools to challenge what I feel like doesn't align with me. My dad is a firm believer is in if something is bothering you, talk about it. But then what happens when what you are doing is bothering me, sweetheart? Like, what are we gonna do about that? Like, yes. But then I felt like sometimes I can come off a little too passionate to the point where you think I'm raising my voice, but I'm just being passionate. I'm just being passionate. But yeah, when it comes to being influenced and like I understand where you're coming from, and like it's well-meaning, you know. I understand where you're coming from, and I know it's coming from a good place. But I'm gonna need you to listen. Okay, I'm gonna need you to listen.
I like to see how that plays out in an African household.
Because
I have gotten in trouble so much ever since I got back from America. And that's the thing, right? I have done other stuff other than that, but everybody just keeps bringing me back to that moment. Like, oh my goodness, don't you listen anymore because you've done this and that. I'm like, no. Like, why are we bringing my trip to America into this?
Like, Aka, when I say those exact words, oh my gosh, my mom's going to be so pissed.
Like, what is the main topic? When you've gone to other countries at the point we've reached, why is America the only one you want? And I see, this is why, like, you and I relate at so many different levels, because that's my life too. At any given point, everybody is going to say, oh my goodness, you're being rude, you're being mean, you're not being considerate, you're becoming more self-centered, it's always about you. Trust me. Like, I sit in conversations and I have my mouth shut and like, but you don't talk to us. I'm like, but you don't listen. What do you want me to do? Yeah, I think it's a cost. I don't even think we're at our peak yet. I can imagine how it's going to be when we are successful and we are more confident to kind of speak our mind and everything.
Right. And yeah, like, it's not even like outside of like the family setup. It's like, oh, because you've gone to this place, you think you know, and you think you know better than. I'm like, first of all, because I've been there, I'm exposed. So I know what I'm talking about. So yes, I do think I know a tad bit better than what you see.
It's on true
social media, because it's curated. But I was there, okay. I saw with my own two God-given eyes what you're saying is not what is on the ground, darling. Like,
oh my goodness, Mangala is such a me. And for me, my second one is, I'm not your friend. Please, as we, because also one thing we realized when we went and came back was, now people wanted to affiliate and associate, but
oh, wow.
All that, I wasn't at your level, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what goes around in the streets of Lusaka or just everywhere is, if you're not at a specific level with certain people, if you're not as famous, or if you don't have as many followers, and if you're not as vocal about your work, you might be doing the work, but you're not as vocal on social media, they don't regard you, right?
Yeah.
And I am that person. Like, I am not vocal. Like, literally, I'm always let my work speak for myself, this, that. And my thing was, everybody texting me and saying, we are friends. Firstly,
who is we? Do you speak French? Oui.
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 So for me, and because most family didn't know as well. So family, like, only my immediate family knew. So that was my mom's family, knew, and my dad. I was traveling, right? I got back. Everybody found out when I was back that I went. Strategically, I didn't want the pressure. So everybody found out when I was back. And it was a lot of pressure to say, hey, you went. What did you bring for us? What did you do this? What did you do? I didn't bring anything for anybody. Like, I literally just went shopping for myself because I like to shop for myself. And everybody was so upset. I did bring a few people, a few staff. Again, very selective. My friends and family, but not everybody. And then you reach a point where after that, you have the postmath where everybody wants to be your friend because of that one thing, but you're also being scrutinized. We're like, oh, are you speaking like that because you went to America? Oh, are you doing that? No, but I was doing this before I went. I've come back. I'm still doing it. What's the correlation? Now that you're just going to blame a place, I was there for like a month or two or 6 weeks. How was your experience back home when you came back?
When I came back, first of all, I got a lot of stuff. You know, that thing, how do I explain this? Like, I'm a giver, okay? I had something for everybody, and I mean everybody. I had something for everybody, especially, like, my siblings and whatnot, because they're like, oh, give me Legos, give me what, right? So I had something for everybody. I'm really close to my, like, two sisters of mine, and I'm extremely close to my grandmas and whatnot, so there was something for everybody. But then when I came back, I had all this attention on me, you know. It was like, oh no, so what are you gonna do? Because I was also applying to go back to school, that's it, because I was thinking of transferring from Zambian University to a U.S. university, and I was in the Education USA program. And you know, when you become heavily affiliated to, like, the U.S. embassy and all the activities, it's like, you know, it becomes like, oh, now she's, you know, the American girly, because it even changed, you know. Everything changed. It was just like Miss America.
Oh, and you know, like, they call me Mangala Wait. Ine, guys, it's been 2 years. Every single time my uncle see me at a family event, America is here. What do you mean?
I'm telling you, like, it was one time, guys. It was one
time. What?
But please. Like, after that, I even saw, like, a few people that I never thought would ever reach out to me actually did. I was just like, is it because of America you are a catalyst? Wow. What are you doing here? You know, where you would be at certain events and this person wouldn't look twice at you.
Yeah, I know.
And then all of a sudden it's, hi, how are you doing? Da, 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 da. And I'm just like, you know, where I had to, like, sit down and, like, rationalize. I'm like, these people came. These are the day ones before America, and these are the day ones after America. Don't get me wrong. There's some people that have, like, come into my life after that experience that are, like, genuine and whatever. But you can tell who's real and who's not, right? You know? And it was, I mean, coming back, I think because I pick up on things pretty quickly, even the way I spoke changed, right? And it was the point where my dad would be, like, on video calls with me, and he's like, is this how you talk? I'm like, sir, okay, calm down, daddy, chill. Like,
move on.
Like, so coming back, that's when I took, like, the couch, when they're telling us about culture shock. Coming back, I experienced like the real culture shock, because growing up on American media, American television, music, everything I've brought, all the pop culture and entertainment that I know is largely from America. Yeah. So going there, I felt like that I'm going to my second home. Like, I can't get lost, you know? I know that place. Like, leave me in the middle of New York City. I know where I'm going. Right? Yeah. That type of thing. But then coming back, And I was coming back to already like so much pressure. Coming back, first of all, you're coming back to load shedding. The day I landed back in Zambia, there was no power. I saw power at 20 hours. Mind you, I flew in at 8. I'm just like, this can't be real. Okay. And just readjusting. Like readjusting to the fact that, okay, I'm not going back to school at this time. I'm going to have to go back to school next year because I've missed the courses that I'm like, it was so complicated. And I was dealing with so many things at that point. But then one thing that really stood out to me again was like just having a strong support system to ease me back into being Mwangala, like the person that I am here, and also easing them into them knowing that I have evolved and I have changed. Like the person that I left is not the person that I have come back as. You know, I've seen things, I know things, different things have inspired me. I have laughed, I have cried. I cried.
I'm such a crier. Me too. Ish.
Like I cried so much.
I think I cry more after America. Like, ish. I don't know why, but then the environment is curated to feel like a safe space. And the first times you're shy. When we were leaving, the night before we left, we had like a full circle moment where they played a game where we had to hug certain people or something. That
game left me a mess. I never want to play that game again.
Did you guys get to jump into the fountain?
I did.
Yeah?
Mom, when you do listen to this, I actually did jump into the fountain. Sorry.
So we also bet. Like when we're doing the school tour, we did a bet to say, hey, when this is all done, it's the last night, we're going to jump into the fountain. Mm-hmm. And we jumped into the fountain. It was so fun. But it was like after we cried, we all go, let's go. We all went for a night walk. We jumped into the fountain. Then we went back. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that exercise was so, and you know, when you open your eyes and there's no sign of Jaden, there's no sign of Dr. Lizzie, not Dr. Mary, not Dr. Lindsay, and you're just there and now you're all bawling your eyes out. Like, oh, I'm going to miss you so much.
They hide in a room. I think they hide in the kitchen.
I think they do hide in the kitchen because I was there. They hide in the kitchen
or something.
But this can't be real.
Well, I think we've talked about a lot of stuff, and one of my moments that I appreciate about you is you're well spoken. Again, you've been doing this for 10 years and you're 20, so hence, like, girl. And I like that when we started, you talked about grateful for your parents, hi parents, how they were so intentional in putting you in spaces that would enhance and build on your curiosity. But one thing I also liked that you mentioned was volunteering, right? And I think my listeners would actually listen to this trend. Most of the people I have had on the podcast, I think 80% of them talk about how volunteering did give them a heads up or push them up a little bit compared to just doing it at the end. What's the one thing that's going around in terms of volunteering and just starting young or positioning yourself that you don't agree with? Like,
everyone wants to be a LinkedIn motivational speaker. You simply cannot. I failed to be a LinkedIn motivation. Like, if you're listening to this podcast and you're starting young and you're starting your journey in change making, I'm going to hold your hand when I say this. You all can't be LinkedIn motivational speakers. Be authentic, okay? You can't, like, there's so much that we haven't unlocked on the LinkedIn platform, okay? There's so much. Please make your experience as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example of my platform. On my platform, when you open my LinkedIn, I'm just telling you about the stuff that I've done, period. That's all. I was at this event. I went to this place. I won this award. Yeah. It just doesn't feel real to me, you know? It really doesn't feel real to me. Another thing that you want to get to, and there's this thing that you just want to get to, you want to get in spaces with people and you don't know what your intention with those people are.
And you just want to take pictures with them.
Yes, you just want to take pictures with them and post on your LinkedIn. Like, what is your intention? When you're going into a room or when you're going into a particular space, you need to know what you're going there for. If you're going to go to a networking event, don't go to a networking event because maybe so-and-so might be there. So-and-so, you might have a conversation with so-and-so and it ends there. Yeah, you're going to get their number. You're going to text them. They may or may not respond. You may start viewing their status and it goes on like that. No. I mean, she's my sister's friend. And now she's my sister now, basically. Yeah. I met her at my niece's birthday party. And I didn't know she ran an organization, right? Mm-hmm. So she's like, oh, I'm such a huge fan of your work. I'm like, you know my work. She's like, yes, like I follow you and whatnot. I'm like, that's so cool. And we connected on that level. And then now we're on a level where, like, you're mentioning each other's rooms in, mentioning each other's names in rooms where you're not. So, like, I feel like there's a lack of intentionality when young people are starting in this space. And
The people
pleasing thing. Remember what we talked about that day when I talked about the people pleasing thing.
I think I say this to people a lot. Like, have relationships with people outside mm-hmm. them doing stuff for you, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I also think that we all can't be affiliated to everybody, but you can have. I don't know if you've read Malcolm Gladwell's book. I think it's a tipping point, right? Is it the tipping point? I think it's a tipping point that has different types of people. I've forgotten the names, but there are four different types of people. There are people that can introduce you to somebody. There are connectors. Yeah, there's a connector and people that know people, right? A connector knows like 50 people, so they can connect you to 50 people. I think it's a Marvel knows at least 10 people, and when you ask for help, they will give you those names. And I think there's a seller, I've forgotten the name, but it's the tipping point is such a good book. So that's by Malcolm Gladwell, right? And when you reach to a point, anyway, the point I have reached, right? I don't need to go to a networking event and network with everybody. I actually go to networking events and look for one or two people that I know, that I'm already acquainted with. Like, I don't have to start from scratch. And what that does for me is they get introduced me. Mm-hmm. Literally, every time I'm out at an event, I'm like, hey, I know you. I know your work from Dani and Dani, and I like it, and da-da-da-da. Oh, yeah, Dani and Dani. Oh, yeah, my friend. What do you do? I do this and that. I'm like, whoa. By the way, I was just talking to somebody that does the work you're doing, and I think you guys would do great. And they connect me to that person, right? It brings in a little bit of ability, and the other person will respect you more. So yeah, I do get it. And there's a people pleasing thing, and also there's a bootlicking, by the way, where I really have to beg. Like, I really should be doing something to be worthy of certain people's responses. This is why I don't get cards when I go to networking events. I think I went to two networking events in a space of 2 weeks with very high profile, and I got 3 cards. And those 3 cards responded to me because they really liked me, and I'm grateful it ended there. Everybody else, it feels like a chore because I know you won't respond. You're being polite. So, yeah, to add on the one you said, people just put in, everybody wants to be a motivation speaker. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's because we have AI, it means we can write about anything. So everybody is writing about everything, and we do not know what to know them on. It's hard to keep track of who you are. Like, for me, I want to be known as somebody that is ingrained in talking about skills development. That's all. Mm-hmm. Like, even the work I do, I always ask myself, does this meet my vision of the self I want to do and the work I want to do for my community? Does this talk about skills development? If not, I'm like, I don't want to talk about that then. I don't want to be at this space because I'm not. But it's like, take it. It's like, it's interesting that I can say. I have no words, but interesting. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's very important. Like, if there's anything that anyone can take away from, like, they can take from my work, is that I've never been known to do anything else other than, like, yeah, I have done climate justice advocacy, but the main thing, when you just hear Mwangala, you think STEM. Yeah. And that's what your brand or whatever you're trying to do is supposed to speak to. It's a, your work is supposed to speak for you. Whatever you do, in whatever you do, seek to make an impact, not just for it to look flowery and whatnot. Because you can write 6, 7, 10 paragraphs on LinkedIn, but it's just words. You don't agree with what you're saying, you know? And when we have conversations with you about, like, the depth of your work, why do you do what you do, you know? We want you to, like, we want, because you can see when someone's genuinely passionate about something that they're talking about. Yeah. Because I feel it all the time. Like, whenever someone asks me, why are you so passionate about STEM? I mean, I'll sit up, my voice will become big, my eyes will light up. You will see that this girl really, really loves technology. Yeah. She really loves STEM and she really loves the space that she's in. And so strive to get to a point where your work is the one that speaks for you. And you don't necessarily have to kiss up to people or make yourself look lesser than or look like you're always ready to, you know, do certain things for a certain opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, some people have got, like, some people have gotten ahead with, like, doing stuff like this. But then, at the end of the day, really, what are you going to feel like you've achieved for yourself in your heart? Because it comes down, it boils down to you as an individual. If you come into this space, and I say this all the time, and even, like, in the volunteer training I've been facilitating for my organization, I've been telling them, if you've come in, if you come into this space because you've seen that Mwangala gets awards, Mwangala goes places, Mwangala does this, Mwangala does this, it won't work. Yeah. Why are you doing what you're doing? It's supposed to be, if it, I do what I do for girls who look like me, for them to look, to see at, okay, this is possible.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an easy journey, but it definitely is possible because I've done it. And I always encourage people to go above and beyond and exceed everything that I've ever done. And so if people, if you're going to come into this space just for the glitter and the gold, it won't go particularly very far. So,
I like the point you have actually mentioned, because everything looks glittery and gold. Like, not all that glitters is gold, guys. Mm-hmm. And it actually does take a certain amount of manpower and brain set and resilience to do the same work consistently. When it gets more, no one is clapping, because the only time, and I always said this to say, I think maybe going to America was the one time I looked like the work I was doing, I got an award for it.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine I was putting in maybe four, five years of different work that I've been working on to discover myself. And I get this one time an award to go to America and pursue my leadership journey. And that's all people can see. So people think that what you have achieved in 10 years, they can do it in 2 months.
Mm-hmm. They can.
But it's actually not going to be 2 months, it's 2 years. I tell myself that, and I talk about, now I'm starting to talk more about my journey as a business owner and an entrepreneur and what I do. And I'm like, well, really, it, a lot of stuff might start looking upwards now because a lot of things are falling into place now at the end. But it's actually taken me almost over 2 years to deciding. Mm-hmm. To building this organization that I have, this company, for me to even have a clear vision of what I want it to be like. And every time I work with people, I'm like, you can't have what I have, because what I have was earned. and earned differently, but it was earned, right? You can tap into it. You can maybe use it to upscale or fast track yours, but certain people just want Akka because they have seen Akka do this for a while. They have seen Manga do this for a while. They've seen Farin do this for a while. And I have the track record. So if you're only here and thinking, I think most of us are always just here for the good time. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, which is sad, but I say this in the relationships a lot. I'm like, I'm just here for the good time. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. But the moments it will get hard. The moments it will get hard. Are you going to be there when it gets hard? When it gets questionable, when everybody thinks you're crazy, you're rude, you're too out there, you're too vocal. And also you reach a point where I've reached where everything now is like, okay, great, you're doing this, but do you ever plan to get married? Right? And honestly, it has different stages and I am just trying. It's like I barely managed the last one and I'm like, there's a new one now, the new questions. So yeah, it really, I think the key word would be it comes at a cost and maybe you don't show people that it does come at a cost. I might be looking like I'm cheating, but yeah.
And you know, remember at Faith's book launch, when me, you and Farid were talking about how we make it look so easy.
I know. To the point
where people ask you, like my life is falling apart. Okay. It's falling apart and it's building at the same time. I don't know what's happening. Okay. But outside it's looking like I'm managing because you know, it eventually becomes, and if you're doing something that you love, it becomes second nature to you. You're just like, you know what? It's okay. I mean, here I am. I have a cold, right? But listen to how passionately I'm speaking. Bro, I wasn't talking like this in the morning.
Bro, when I was talking like this and you and I were catching up, you're like, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. But when the podcast started, Mangala changed. I was like, girl, I thought you missed me. For the podcast, Mangala is a different person. And that's the thing, right? That was a safe space. I always tell this to people, have friends. Because it's not everything I can come online to talk to. I think days before leading to that, I was crying. I called Farin and I was crying. I was just burdening Farin with my life stories at that moment. And she and I are just coexisting. I'm like, bruh. And that's the thing. Like, you also, it's not that we try to make it so easy, but we also, what does it do for me to cry on TikTok? Will it solve my problems, right?
Nope.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So as much as we would like to be honest, I try to be as honest as I can, but I also want to be very authentic about my honesty. Is, do I want pity from 10,000 people or do I want a conversation with one of my friends to just be with me in that moment? Not to solve my problems, but just to be there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You just need to listen. And you know, that's what people often mistake venting for. Like, I don't want solutions. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do after this. Don't worry. But I just need you to listen so that I can
get
you
to talk about it.
Right?
Yeah. No, I agree. And taking us back to that moment, we all said, girl, me too. You know what? Mm-hmm. And we all went into detail to why our lives are falling apart, but look like they're thriving. I always say I can't look like my problem, so I always look great. And so for me, it's, if you take anything from this, is I hope you learn to find your people and find your community. Because when things fall apart in the real world, you want to have people you can come back to. You want to have people like me and Mwangala who have friends, and we can come back to each other and just say, the tea I have for you, the thing I heard. You know what I mean? And also someone to just correct you, to say, hey, I saw that and I didn't feel great about it, or I didn't like that. Or because majority of the people don't care. And that's one thing I think I'm very grateful about our experience in the US, is we already have a common ground, and that makes it easy for us to build on our relationships. And I think that also solidified who I was as a person and how I wanted to show up for people and wanted and saw the power of community and how that does for me when I need them and how I show up for them.
Yeah.
Mangala, I want to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Ooh, okay. So,
be nice. Yeah, okay. I hope I don't regret
this. How did Aka get so cool? Like, how are you such a cool person? Because I'm like, if I went to uni at the same time Aka was in uni and I saw her in the corridor, I'm like, hi, please, you're so cool. Because me, I'm not shy. Okay, I'm the type to walk up to random women in public and say, you look very beautiful today.
And you know what? You and I are the same person. My friends say, okay, you're going to get kidnapped one day because you're always randomly complimenting people you don't know. And I compliment women. Like, women are my audience for that.
Like,
how did I get so cool? Is the question. I don't even know. I know I'm pretty hot and pretty. Cool.
Very good.
Okay, so I always think like I was an underdog. So if you've read David and Goliath, the Bible, and just Malcolm Gladwell's work, there's a book called David and Goliath. I always felt like an underdog, right? And when you feel like you're not as book smart as everybody, you kind of now start wondering, what else can I do to get the limelight? I think to get the attention, to get the praise, what do I need to do? Which is also a bad thing, but we're focusing on the cool. So over the years, I always wanted to stand out, but I also wanted to stand out in my own way, I guess. My grandfather used to say I'm such a ball of light and sunshine and all the cool stuff. And with growing up in adulthood, I realized that that fades away because of the different turmoils life throws at you. But I always wanted to radiate that for myself and others. But mostly immediately after COVID, I wanted to radiate that for myself. So I started doing stuff I like. I like museums. I like long walks. I don't like people as much. So I go to places where there are no people. And because I also know I'm such a cool person, I try not to meet people who are not cool, because then you're going to dim my light and make myself. And I'm going to feel bad about myself because I'm also a people pleaser and I want to know what I did wrong and everything. So appearance-wise, what I said to do was show up as how I wanted to feel. So mostly you're going to find me in bright stuff. Like, you're going to find me wearing something pink, pink hair, like just being a bundle of light. That helps me radiate that to myself. Like, so mostly I like to say I'm a very self-serving human being because I can't give what I don't have. So I think later on that has translated to being cool, because now, yeah, people get to me. Awkward. People come to me like, you're so cool. And in my first glance, I think people are cool because of what I'm wearing, like my hair, my clothes and everything. That's what I think people mean, that I'm cool or something. Because also, like, I really do show up. Like, showing up in blue hair, in pink hair, it does take a lot of guts. That every single time and act like you have everybody, like I'm colorblind. So yeah, appearance wise I think I do it for myself more. I like color and I like to show that, and over time I think people have translated that to be cool, but it's really a coping mechanism of I went from being an underdog to now being an outlier, right? So I was really not good at anything. I was a David, and now I am maybe, who could I say an out? Yeah, now I'm just an outlier, right? So it's, the outlier world is not mine. I've never been there. I don't understand it, and I don't feel like I feel insecure about being in certain spaces, but I have earned my stay there. And I kind of know how it work, how the game is done in that world. So I'm like, okay, so how do I sustain, how do I keep myself sane in a world where it's very, it could get chaotic. So yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question. It's really hard to pinpoint what makes me cool, but I think it's like a series of different events. And yeah, mostly a coping mechanism, really. Like my dressing and everything. It's really a coping mechanism. Apart from the fact that I really don't care what others think about me, side note, it's really just been a coping mechanism because I'm really in spaces I feel like I don't fit. And I like to crave things that are familiar. And me showing up as me is the most familiar thing. And I try to be a safe space to myself every single time. Did I answer your question?
That is a wonderful, wonderful answer to my question.
Well, I'm glad. I am so grateful you were here, Mangala. I have laughed so hard. It was so fun. What do you look forward to?
In terms of what?
Everything. In general, like if you're thinking now, do you look forward to taking a nap because you are down with a cold? Like, what do you genuinely look forward to?
I think I look forward to being in a place where I finally am able to fully rest. I know my parents always say you only rest when you die, but like to be able to relax my mind and really just let everything just flow naturally. You know, with being the person that I am, this comes with a lot of, like, I'm very critical of myself, you know. My friends always say, you're so free-flowing and so you allow people to make mistakes, but you don't allow yourself to make mistakes. So what I'm looking forward to for myself is I want to get to a point where I am free, like, with myself. I don't think anyone really is free of self-doubt, but like get to a point where I'm less critical of myself and just get to a point where I wake up every day doing what I love. And I never want to find myself in a situation where I'm aiming to never find myself in a situation where my job feels like a job. And I want it to feel like, you know, I could do this every day. So like one thing I think, in summary, what I look forward to is being able to fully rest and allow myself to relax and not be so critical of myself.
I like that. I really like that. I think you've touched on something very important and very crucial is, and what I hope the listeners take from this is that I know we look cool, but we have like the best support system. We have the best people always cheering us on. But most importantly, we have self-doubt every single day. It's just that we choose to show up. And that's what makes us different and makes this whole thing different. So yeah, I'm really grateful for this conversation, Mangala. It's been a joy, honestly.
It's made me feel better. So much better.
Oh my goodness. I'm so glad. Oh my God, thank you so much. And for everybody listening, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. It's just a conversation between friends. I hope you laughed because I died and I was like, I really need to be serious. But I died on the most times and I am so grateful Mangala was here. So with that being said, that's bye from us.
Bye.